Hi, I'm Richard, the founder of 10 Adventures, and this is the 10 Adventures podcast. Each week, we talk to real people about real adventures as they explore this incredible planet we all live on.
Today on the 10 Adventures podcast, I'm talking with Natasha and Christian Mandel, two Austrian adventurers who hiked Canada's Great Divide Trail in 2018, dealing with a summer of smoke, closures, and snow as they hiked this legendary 1,100-kilometer trail through the Canadian Rockies. With me today is Karen. Hi, Natasha. Hi, Christian. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
So I'm excited talking with both of you. You've contributed some photos and information to 10 Adventures, and it looks like a legendary trip, the Great Divide Trail. Can you tell us a little bit about this trail for people that don't know anything about it?
Yeah, sure, of course. So, well, the GDT, it's a long-distance hike in Canada, and it's about 1,100 kilometers long. And it starts at the U.S.-Canadian border at Waterton Lakes, and then it goes all the way up through different very scenic parts of Canada, for example, Mount Assiniboine and Yoho, Banff National Park, Jasper National Park, and also including the Skyline Trail. And in the north, it ends at Kakwa Lake. That is very remote, so you have to walk out on a first service road for about 75 kilometers. And from there, you even have to hitch 2 hours to Prince George. So that is a very wild ending and spectacular. And that's also what the GT is known for, its remoteness and its wilderness.
That's why we wanted to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was looking at some itineraries for the Great Divide Trail, and I was really amazed at how remote some of the locations were. So I was wondering what led you to want to do a trail like that.
We met a year before. She was doing the PCT and I was doing the JMT. And before that, I have only hiked in Europe. And for me, it was a great experience. It was really wild. In Europe, we don't have, especially in Austria, we don't have bears anymore. There's only deer that you can see and no bears. And yeah, and it was a great experience. And we wanted to take it further. And also in Austria, it's forbidden to pitch a tent. You cannot go into the mountains and just sleep there. Of course, we have the mountain huts, but it's not the same experience, I think. And that's why we wanted to do it.
So, yeah, it's much wilder there. And also compared to the PCT, it's just so much more remote, and the carries between the resupply points are so much longer. And yeah, it was a true wilderness experience, and that's why we wanted to do it.
So you had had some experience doing multi-day trekking because you had done the Pacific Crest Trail.
Yeah, the year before in 2017. But before that, I have never actually done any long distance trips or, yeah, trail. Just go in the mountains and to the huts. But yeah, that was it.
Yeah.
So that would be a totally different experience than to go from hiking where there's mountain huts to then hiking the Pacific Crest Trail where you're in and out of towns and that type of thing. And then, wow, in the Canadian remote wilderness for many days at a time.
Yeah, that was intense.
I mean, it looked to me, looking at some of these itineraries, that it must have taken an incredible amount of preparation to get ready to do this trail.
Yeah, there was a lot of preparation. We didn't do that much physical preparation. It was more organization, just like you said, with the itinerary. But it turned out to be too much preparation for us, because we didn't manage to keep to stick to the itinerary, because we were too slow, because the trail was too hard.
that was actually a very hard part of the planning, because we had to set up an itinerary and have every single campsite reserved in advance. And that's so hard, because even if you start one day later, nothing will work out.
Yeah, for example, the rock wall trail or the Skyline Trail, because they're booked out.
Or Mount Assiniboine.
And yeah.
So that was pretty hard, and we just tried to do it and have some extra days to, I don't know if anything happens, that was the whole organization thing and reservation thing, because they were of course booked up in summer, in August and September.
Yeah, that was one thing that I thought just looking at the itinerary, is so many of the spots you are going through are places that are just in and of themselves really hard to get a reservation at. So I was impressed that you could link those all together and be on time.
Yeah, well, we weren't on time.
So. Actually, it was really funny because we had a couch surfing host in Prince George, and actually we were on time.
The first day
I told him that we would arrive, we arrived. It was really lucky, but
in between.
But we had to skip some sections.
Because of the fire closures?
Yes.
For example, like you said, the Rockwell Trail, that would have been amazing, but we had to skip it because it was closed. It just closed a couple days before we arrived there, and we had to bail out and go to Banff, and yeah.
There were options to exit and then re-enter for areas that were closed.
Yeah, sometimes in the high use areas, of course, there are many exit points. But if there would have been anything in the end, there's literally no exit point. So you have to just go or turn back.
Right.
I'm really interested. You guys met in the Sierras the year before. You're planning this, you know, really challenging 1,100 kilometer hike. What was your thinking about, you know, doing this trek with somebody you were, you know, still kind of getting to know? Were there any worries, or was it excitement, or was it, hey, how are we going to handle this, doing this together?
Actually, it was really funny because we met in the Sierras and then we exchanged emails.
A lot.
And
for about 5-6 months.
Yes. And then I just wanted to do something with her. I said, let's hike in the summer. And she said, I'm already in Canada. And then I said, okay, let's do the GDT. But actually...
And I told him, well, that was the plan. I wanted to do the GDT.
And for me, I actually didn't thought of doing the GDT, but I just wanted to get closer to her. Both things worked out great. So the GDT and us.
What a story. You fell in love. Through hiking, you know, it's happened a few times. We interviewed somebody from the PCT, and they found their partner on the PCT, and somebody else. You know, I think it's, you know, you're doing these trips where you're really challenging yourself, and you're open to new experiences and meeting new people. It's really great to, you know, find a relationship that way. I'm also interested. You know, you mentioned you wanted to go and see the wildlife, you know, in Canada, and as someone who's, you know, done a lot of hiking in Canada as well as Europe, there is like a lot of wildlife here. Did you guys see a lot of wildlife on your trip? Did you meet that goal of seeing animals in the wild?
Well, yeah, of course we saw a lot of wildlife. We saw about 3 bears, I think. 1 grizzly bear, but he was very, very far away.
Thankfully, the grizzly bear was very far away, I might add.
A very nice sighting because you could just see him and watch him.
The other 2 bears, they were black bears, and he was like, nice, let's go closer.
No, I didn't say that. I just want to have
bears spray out and be careful. And he was like, oh cool.
But so that was really nice. But once we had to follow cougar tracks on snow, so that was why we were sure that cougar tracks.
We had to follow them because we were always checking on the GPS track, and the cougar was taking the exact same track like the GPS said that we should go.
So that was kind of scary. And also once when you got snowed in, because I think we got snowed in twice or 3 times, we were very freaked out because of the weather and the trail. We didn't find it. And then we suddenly saw footprints and we were like, well, there's somebody else. And it was in the last section, so it was very, very unlikely that there would be anybody.
But of course,
else.
It was a bear,
and so about 50 minutes later, after following these tracks, we found out that this is clearly bear footprints,
But the most wildlife we saw in section G, which is the last section from Mount Robson to Kakwa Lake, and we saw porcupines, caribou. Elks and a bear, and that was great.
Oh wow, I was thinking about you seeing those bear prints with that you were following for the trail. And I was thinking, was that bear wearing hiking boots? And that's why.
I don't know. I think that we might have been hallucinating because a very intense situation back then. And it was kind of similar. I don't know.
The prints were not like a circle, but more narrow, like
a foot,
a foot. And yeah, for us it was really strange and we didn't know what it was, so.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys saw a lot of wildlife. Now, so just so I understand, you started in the south then, around Waterton, is that right? And then you hiked north.
Yeah, yes. Right. We did North Bund.
What was it like, say, the first week as you were just setting off?
Well, that was a little bit strange because I was recovering from a very bad flu. So that was why we were very unsure when we could start the trail and if we could start and how I would feel. So we took it very easy and he also took a lot of my food. So his pack was much heavier than intended. Well, we were nervous and unsure how it would all go. But as soon as we were there, things got better and I recovered and we were excited to see all the scenery because I've heard so much about the Canadian Rockies and I really liked them. And it was just overwhelming already in the first section to have these endless chain ridges and this beautiful scenery.
Yeah, we were always checking the map and every mountain ridge was called Endless Chain Ridge. That was great, yeah,
that's nothing like we have here because it's all more narrow here, and we have these valleys and then the high peaks and then another valley and these endless ranges in Canada. They're just amazing.
And so at the beginning, you said there was a mixture of excitement and nervousness and you were unwell. And so how did your body cope at the beginning? Do you feel like you were ready for what you were taking on physically, or did it take some time to adjust to the demands of the trail?
Because we were really starting slow because she was still feeling sick.
Yeah.
For me, it was quite easy in the beginning. I mean, it was just
the pack weight,
weight on my shoulders, yeah. But other than that, it was, for me, it was quite easy. But because of the heavy weight, on the third or fourth day, I started to feel my knee. It didn't go away the whole trail. And some days were good, some days were really bad. Yeah.
Yeah, but you somehow got used to it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, but somehow you always make it. And a long trail is always about your mind more than the body, I think. It's always about the mind.
That's a good point. I always feel that's the part that fails me first is the mind, you know, because you start thinking, oh no, I don't think I can do that. And I would think having a knee injury would be a bit unnerving, hey, right at the beginning.
When you have invested all that planning and this excitement and you really want to do it, then it's somehow like, well, the knee is not that good and I wasn't feeling so well, but we will just do it and that keeps you going.
It would have been easier to end it if we were from Canada, because then we wouldn't have planned that much maybe, or
and we could have
gone again. But for us it was somehow clear that we would only do it once, the GDT, only do it once because we wanted to have family and...
Right, so you were committed. You are committed, knee or no knee, you had to do that.
Yes.
we had to do it then, and if not, then it wouldn't have happened.
I'm really interested in pack weight, you know, carrying all this food. Had you approached this kind of, you know, you'd done the PCT, so obviously you understood the rigors of through hiking. Were you guys really ultralight, or, you know, was your pack pretty heavy to begin with, so having twice the food was unbearable?
Well, actually, we are not these ultralighters, but we, of course, try to keep our pack weight light. The base weight was okay, but we had a lot of food.
Yeah, the problem with us is the food.
Because we eat a lot.
For example, our tent was really light. I mean, about 400 grams for us both. The clothes, really light. The bag was really light, but we had so much food and we met other through hikers, and they only had one ersack, one little ersack, and we had a big ersack for me.
From first birth.
A medium.
Yeah.
No, you had another.
Ah, yeah, right. You had a big one. Yeah.
Yes, and then still we had to hang a whole bag of food.
Because it didn't fit our ersacks.
Yeah, because we needed the food.
Yeah.
But so we just need it for hiking. Yeah.
We had about more than 1 kilo of food per day. And so that was in the long stretches, 9 to 11 kilos of food, and then the water, and then the base weight. So
yeah.
He was at least at 20, 22 kilos.
Yeah.
And I was a little bit lighter.
So that's not really light, but it's just because of the food when you're hiking like 7-8 days without resupply, then you just have to have a lot of food.
Yeah, and you have extra food in case something happens. So, yeah.
Right. Did you ever go to any of those other through hikers that had the little tiny ersacks and ask them, hey, like, what are you eating? How come you have so much less volume than we do?
We actually didn't meet a lot of through hikers, I would say.
We only
met four.
One couple in the first section,
yeah.
and then another through hiker.
In the last section?
In the last section, but they were something else. They were like professionals. The last through hiker that we met, he was doing the Continental Divide Trail and then the Great Divide Trail. And then in the year after, he was from Australia. And then in the year after, he cycled whole Australia. I don't know how he did this, but he was really skinny and he was not eating a lot.
Well, that's why he was really skinny, I guess, eh?
And we are eating a lot. Everybody from our family tells us... Yeah, that we never stop eating.
Yeah.
Well, I guess on a trail like that, you're burning so much energy. So you absolutely need it. So then with your illness and your knee, as kind of things went on, those settled down?
Yeah, well, my illness got better pretty quickly. And after the first section, I felt completely recuperated and was really excited for the rest. So that was really nice.
Yeah, and my knee, it was better sometimes. Sometimes it was worse, but it was okay.
Yeah, not too bad.
Yeah, it was not too bad. And I think we ordered some tape.
Yeah, right.
And then when I used the tape, sometimes it was completely gone. That was great, yeah.
Well, that's good. So what was like a typical day like for you when you were doing the trail?
Typical day. That's difficult. It mostly depends on the weather. When the weather was good, then... We were getting up early, hiking the whole day, and taking in the scenery.
Of course, filtering a lot of water.
Eating a lot of food, I guess.
It was so, so nice if when we could have a lunch, a dry lunch, because mostly it was raining, especially in the end. So when it was not raining, it was very relaxed and we could just sit there taking the scenery.
Yeah.
But when it was raining and it was already so cold, it was like just stuffing the food into your mouth. Yeah, and then just go on. That was not fun at all. The hiking was always fine because you get warmer. But when it's so cold and you just don't want to eat, but you have to.
We had to keep moving the whole time. The problem was when it was raining and cold, we still had to do a lot of bushwhacking and everything was wet. And yeah, then when you have lunch, then you cannot stand still and eat. Yeah, you have to eat fast and go on
just,
because then you feel warm again.
Yeah. And when it was sunny, it was quite nice because we could just dry out our things. And when it was raining, there was just nothing happening.
Yeah.
Just walking and having a quick lunch, a quick dinner, and then go back into the wet sleeping bag and wet tent. And
a typical day on the GTT, a lot of navigating in some sections, a lot of navigating. In the evening, bear hang.
which almost took an hour sometimes.
But only if you have so much food like us.
Yeah. Yeah. But of course, we had to hang the extra sack that we had.
And that took a lot of time because the trees were not really good for hanging.
Yeah, branches were going down, so you couldn't really hang it up. But
it always worked.
The bear hang was for your extra food. that you didn't have in an ursac. And then did you have to hang the ursac, or did that just go out wherever?
We didn't hang the ursac.
You have to make a special knot, and then it's safe, they say. Yeah. And we never had any issues with the ursac. So the ursac is great and much better than the bear can, because it's so heavy.
Yeah, and the other food, we put it in an odor-proof pack.
Sack, yeah, pack. Yeah.
What was it called?
Opsac, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, that's the one. And then we put it in a rain...
just in a cover and then...
Yes, just in a cover, and then we hang it on the...
And so were you doing long distances for your days? It sounds like you were on the trail long days.
Yeah, that really depended on the weather and if there was new snow. But when we were doing a good day, it was about up to 30 kilometers. Most of the days it was just like 20, 25. And because all the trying out, the bear hang, the...
Finding the way.
Navigating.
The trail, finding the trail. Yeah, and yeah, we were really slow.
Yeah, we were pretty slow, yeah.
So compared then to the Pacific Crest Trail, did you have to do all those things when you were doing the JMT or the Pacific Crest Trail?
No, not at all.
So those were new skills you had to develop.
It was a holiday.
Yeah, no, the PCT is just straightforward. Sometimes you have to look on your GPS, but not really often. And there's almost always perfect trail. And yeah, that in comparison, it was very easy. But we sometimes didn't even have a trail on the GDT. So it was just like always taking out the GPS app and looking where we could go. And that took so, so much time.
Yeah, and there was one section in one part of the trail in section G to Lake Kakwa, and it was about 1 or 2 kilometers, and there was no trail at all, and it took us 3 or 4 hours because we were so slow, and
it was just uphill and then downhill and only trees and no trail at all, and that was nerve-wracking,
very difficult to find.
That would be nerve-wracking, especially because you're saying that you didn't see any other people. So I don't know, was there always that fear in the back of your mind? What if we're lost? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, we did have this fear, especially in the last two sections, because you're just out there so remote. You know that there are no other people. And if you don't make it, you will have to go back 6 days or 4 or 6 days. So that's no real option. And then we were surprised by snow twice in that section.
Yeah.
And we were very nervous that we wouldn't make it and that we might run out of food. Yeah, we already thought about sending the spot messenger. So that day was not fun.
And that day that you thought about sending that you mean an SOS message kind of thing? So what was happening that day that made you almost send out a message?
Well, that was when the snow kicked in the second time and we were already delayed. So we really didn't see any part of trail. And in the morning, of course, everything was frozen. Our tent was frozen, our sleeping bag. But the worst part was that our shoes were frozen, and they have often been frozen, but not as,
And what we should also say is, because you asked before, a typical day on the GDT, your shoes are always wet, always.
Yeah. And so in the night, they would always freeze. But it was so hard at that time, I really couldn't go in. So we had to boil water, pour it over, and then quickly get into the shoes until they would refreeze.
Yeah.
And then no trail finding and not much.
And we were not really prepared for that kind of weather.
Yeah,
no. For that much snow. And the problem was again that the day before, because of the bushwhacking, it tore holes in my rain jacket. And then everything was wet and I didn't, really everything was wet. And it was also really cold that night.
And we just didn't know if we would get dry again and how many kilometers we would make. But if you would only make 10 kilometers, it would not have worked out.
Because the day before we only made about 11 or 12 kilometers, but we were hiking the whole day.
Yeah.
but we just couldn't go further. And so we didn't know if we could keep going for 4 or 5 days because of the amount of food that we had. But then after that, the trail got a lot better. And yeah.
Yeah, that was lucky.
So was that amount of snow, was that typical for the area for the time you were hiking?
No, I don't.
It was the beginning of September, I think.
No, it was mid-September.
Okay, yeah, then I think.
But we heard of people who had done it at this time, and they were saying there could be some snow, but not that intense. And we just had it 3 times and always quite a lot. And yeah.
You know, when snow comes, like people just, I think, if you haven't been backpacking in snow, you can't even see the trail, especially if you're in the Alpine, where there's not like trees that kind of waymark you. You know, if you're in the Alpine trying to route find, it's super, super tough when everything's covered in, even just 3 or 4 inches of snow. And so I couldn't imagine being in a place where there's very few people to begin with. Then you have this bad weather, you already have tough routes. I can imagine the fear. You're like, we just don't even know where the heck the trail is. I guess you had a GPS app that gave you some indication, thankfully. But, you know, in the old days with just maps, that's how things got really dangerous, because you just came in to find where the trail is.
Yeah, we had a GPS, and one time there was a really scary experience for us, because we were hiking, and every 5 to 10 minutes I was checking the GPS. And then suddenly I wanted to check it, but it wasn't there anymore. So it fell out of my pocket.
So he lost his phone and my
phone.
Oh, no.
And my phone wasn't working. So we were freaked out because we were in the middle of nowhere with, I don't know.
It was the last section to Kakwa, which is the most remote, 10 days walking. But then luckily I turned around and 5 minutes back. And then I found it in the snow. Yeah, that was really lucky.
That would have been unnerving. That is definitely a scary moment, I would think. Especially if it's snowy and also you're cold and wet. You just know, it would be so easy for things to go bad right now.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And that was also the day that we talked about before. That was so hard for us. And I think we even cried on that day because it was really, really scary for us.
Yeah. I think that'd be scary for anybody. And then did you also contend with fire smoke as well, did I hear?
Oh, yeah, that was in section C, just before the rock wall trail.
Also section B was also a little bit of
hazy,
but it was still okay. And
But then section C, it got worse and worse and worse and worse, and the breathing got very hard. So, yeah, that's what I said when we had to bail out before the rock wall trail, because it was also closed.
Yeah. And I think it was at Egypt Lakes.
Yeah, Egypt Lakes. Yeah.
Is it called Egypt Lakes? Yeah.
Yeah, Egypt Lakes. Yeah.
Okay.
So, that was in August, and directly after the snow, directly after the smoke ended, the snow began.
Yeah, it started raining and snowing. And we said, okay, it's cold now, but at least we can see something. So that's good. We were happy because we wanted to see something when we are in Canada. Yeah. And
but then it was cold.
But that was okay.
Yeah.
No smoke.
Yeah, it's funny you talk about the smoke, because last fall I just did a short backpack with my sister-in-laws, and it was really bad smoke. This was in the Coast Mountains in Canada, and we got to this top. The top, it's called Panorama Ridge, and it has an epic panorama, but we literally could see nothing. So it's kind of, I know exactly what you mean. It's kind of a disappointment when you get to these epic places and then you can't see anything.
Yeah, we had that a couple of times. And of course, that's not so great when you expect to have a great view and then there's just nothing. And yeah,
I guess you look at the little things then.
So as you're coming into Kakwa, you know, you've had a really tough, you know, through hike. You dealt with illness, injuries, smoke, route interruptions, you know, hunger, rain, snow. You're getting, you know, your last day. How does it feel? Like, is it tears of joy, relief? You know, what was it like?
the last days, there was still a lot of tension because we didn't know whether we would make it in time or not and run out of food or not. But when we arrived at Kakko Lake, that was a huge relief. We almost couldn't believe it that we're there.
But we didn't really realize that it was over until we arrived there. Yeah, we didn't really realize it, right?
Yeah, but when we got there and then made a fire in the cabin, because the cabin is open and you can go in there, and then just had the view of this lake and then go inside and sleep in a cabin with no rain, no snow, no potential bears. That was just the best sleep we ever had.
Yes.
And it slowly kicked in. And then when we were walking out on the forest service road, yeah, that was just all the tension fell off. And
yeah,
that was.
And also Kakko Lake is the best ending that you can imagine. It's the most beautiful place. It's great.
Yeah, it's almost like, well, all the very known places, Lake Lewis, but it's just no one's there. There's a huge lake and amazing mountains, and it's just.
In the beginning, you asked us why we wanted to do the GDT in Canada. And I think because in Austria or in Europe, we don't have places like this anymore that are this huge, but nobody's there.
Such amazing places. But we just don't notice that there are no people and that you're just there for yourself and you're truly in wilderness. And that was a very special feeling for us to end there and have all these views and just be there on our own and have had all these experiences.
It sounds like a real sense of not only accomplishments, but satisfaction and appreciation in those areas. Sounds amazing. So when you look back, would you do it again?
It's a very difficult question, but I mean, it was a great adventure. But
and for the first time, I would always do it again, of course.
Yes.
For the experience. But if we would go back there, we would maybe do some sections.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing, of course, it tears very much on your body. And all the stress that we had, especially because of the snow.
Yeah.
If we would do it again, we would maybe do some sections and also in July or August when there's no snow potential.
Yeah.
Or less snow. I guess in the Rockies you can always get snow, but there'd be less snow then. Yeah. So if you were to go back and do sections, which sections would you do?
Section G, the last one.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
So which is that one? Like if you just describe from where to where?
It's from Mount Robson to Kakko Lake.
And it's about 11 days. Also already included the walk out on the Forest Service road.
Yeah, but most people walk faster than us, I would say.
Well, okay, so it's around 10 days, I'd say. And it's just so remote. There are almost no people. And it is the wildest experience we ever had. Mm. So that's why we would always do that again.
And incredible views. It was incredible.
But that's where you had the snow and the route finding too. So it's interesting that the one of the best sections was also the toughest too.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I mean, what we wanted with the GDT was a wild adventure, and that's what we got. But now we have grown older and we want to have children, you know, and then you always think about how dangerous that actually was.
And didn't think about that much back then.
Yes, yes.
So, yeah, we just wanted to have a wild experience. And that's definitely what we got.
Yeah.
That sounds like you had definitely a wild, exhilarating experience back there. So what's up next for you two now? I mean, this was a few years ago that you did this. And it seems like a lot's changed in your life since then.
That's true, yeah. Well, so when we got back, we still kept doing some multi-day hiking here in Austria or in Italy. And that's fine for us because we also got back to studies and working. And last year, we also married and now we're building a house.
Yeah.
So
in the mountains.
Yeah.
In the mountains. Oh, lovely. Yeah. Fantastic.
Yes. Yeah.
And in the beginning, we actually wanted to build a log cabin just like Kakwa Lake.
But that wouldn't make a lot of sense.
So you're on to different adventures now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But still a lot of time in the mountains.
Yeah, that's what remains from your few hikes, that it's just so peaceful out in nature and just being out, walking all day, having this fresh air, also sleeping outside. We still do that.
Yeah.
And yeah, that will never get away from you.
Yeah.
It just sticks.
Well, Natasha and Christian, thank you for sharing your experience in the GDT with us. I still remember when I first saw your photos, you know, I just remember these beautiful views with red suns and smoke and snow. And I thought, man, this looks like it was really tough. It turns out it was really tough. I really liked, Christian, what you said, you know, when you did the GDT, you wanted a wild adventure. That's what you got. Maybe now you don't want adventures that wild. I can sympathize with that. You know, backpacking in the Rockies when it's nice out is really beautiful. When it's bad out, it's really, really tough because you have no creature comforts. But I loved hearing your stories. And we have some blog posts on 10 adventures from your experiences. So I'll link to those in the show notes. But I just want to say thanks for sharing your experience because it was just really great to hear from it.
Yeah, really interesting.
Thank you. And we'll talk again soon.
Thank you. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the 10 Adventures podcast. If you liked it, why not give us a review? Better yet, subscribe and get inspired again and again. Also, if you want to find your own adventures, why not check out 10adventures.com, where you can use our free resources to plan your own trip or book a tour in over 60 countries and make your own epic memories on your next adventure.